Get involved on the Big Sports Breakfast, our seventh tackle segment with Channel 7's Josh Masood, 13:53:53. We welcome as many calls as possible. We'll get to air and text messages for Josh, 0419 767 272, as we delve behind the scenes with some of those big issues in rugby league. And just recapping again, Broncos $1.45 up against the Penrith Panthers, $3. So there's a huge difference in the price there. The winner of that takes on Melbourne. Then Saturday, ANZ Stadium, Parramatta are the favourites at tab.com, $1.32 up against the Cowboys. Again, I can see value there, $3.50. And, of course, they go through to play the Roosters. Joining us on the panel is Josh Masood. G'day, Josh.
G'day, boys. Good week of finals, wasn't it, in the opening round?
Yeah, not much to come out of it, obviously.
But that was the sad thing. Like, yeah. I don't reckon I've seen four such good games all season, really, let alone in one weekend. And who was talking about it? Like, it was really disappointing. The fines that they issued to the coaches, I reckon they should come off the salary cap as well. And that would really disincentivize them.
Yeah, we've been chatting, as you can imagine, mate, at length about this.
I don't know how you stop that, do you? The complaining about ref decisions and coaches not doing it.
But when it's that blatant. I believe in free speech. I believe that when it's called for and it's done in a moderate way, of course that should be allowed.
Yeah.
But the way Shane Flanagan did it, to come in there with a piece of paper, clearly aggrieved, had no standing because his team made so many dumb errors and decisions, that just wasn't on.
Well, see, I nearly find the Trent one worse because he left no doubt that it was the referees that cost Manly the game. And I can't agree with that.
Well, you don't think Shane was saying that? See, I thought Trent was not as harsh as Shane.
He said it directly, Trent. He said... Yeah. The referees cost us the game.
The problem was Manly, a club without a CEO, and this is where it falls apart with your corporate governance. Who was there to tap Trent Barrett on the shoulder when he was all worked up going into that press conference and just say, mate, hang on a minute, we're out of the competition. There's nothing to be gained from this from a strategic point of view, i.e. winning the penalty count in the next 4 weeks, like you see the Roosters and the Raiders do in mid-season. That is when you have issues at a club with your corporate governance. Oh. And I think there was a failing there at Manly.
If there is corporate governance, do they do that?
The ones that do it, walk over to the CEO or the chairman and say, am I right to have a $10,000 free hit here? Oh, and you've seen it before because they do it in a strategic way to influence the refs in the coming weeks. But guess what? For Manly or Cronulla, there's no coming weeks.
This gets back to a cultural thing with Garden Rugby League. And culture's come up a fair bit on this program, courtesy of Todd Greenberg, that says there is that culture of referee bashing and it needs to change. But the other culture in football clubs, in rugby league clubs, that I'd love to see change is the coach runs the club. It's the tail wagging the dog. And this is another issue probably for another show, and it wasn't going to be one of our topics, but it is my belief that the coach has way too much say in a football club and how it runs instead of a CEO. As you can see, some clubs don't even have CEOs.
Yeah, well,
and you look at the situation
at Canterbury is a perfect example. When the coach is the most senior figure in that organisation, which Des Hasler was, then he gets away with blue murder and basically look at the state of their salary cap because Des has been able to strong-arm that. And yeah, you're probably right. There's not a lot of CEOs out there now with long-term experience who have the guts to stand up to the coaches.
And if that is one thing that it's my belief and my information is how AFL clubs run separately to National Rugby League clubs is that the football department is all-powerful as far as football is concerned within the AFL structure. And the coach absolutely runs that with the recruitment officer and so on and so forth. But the commercial side of things and the actual club is all run by a CEO.
The CEO must run all facets of the club. Yep. Otherwise, we see a debacle like we saw on the weekend, which costs the club in the hip pocket. Manly, we've spoken about their finances before. That's going to come out straight out of Scott Penn's pocket, that $20,000.
Yeah. It's extraordinary, isn't it? But the finals, as you say, mate, were just
very good.
No, we're good. Good for you.
We've spoken a lot about Matt Moylan, mate. Yeah. What's the latest, do you think?
Yeah, we had a good chat about him and Cronulla while it was a good fit. But as far as Matt Moylan is concerned, he only wants to go to one place, and that is the Manly Warringah Seagulls.
Is that right?
Very close to Trent Barrett. you might recall early in the season when he was dropped after that night out in Melbourne, Trent Barrett actually picked up the phone and phoned Matt Moylan and gave him some condolence owing to their relationship back at Penrith for a few years there. That's highly unusual for a rival coach to do something like that. So they're very, very tight. We spoke last week about Matty Moylan being a keen surfer, wanting to live by the beach.
Yep.
I can tell you he's got 8 clubs have shown interest in him. Believe it or not, including the Bulldogs, have shown a little bit of interest, which is quite laughable. But it's Manly or bust, as I'm hearing, and the moves from Manly are underway to clear up the space. Blake Green looking at a 3-year deal over in the New Zealand Warriors. Jackson Hastings has also been put on the market if he wants to find a new club for the final year of his contract. So that would clear up the cap space for Matty Moylan. I'm understanding around $800,000 a season is what he is chasing. So watch this space. I got a text from his manager overnight stressing that there had been no request for a release from Matt Moylan as yet, but I'm watching this one very closely.
Well, my mail is he stays at Penrith.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
So you've got him. You don't need him at Manly.
Oh, really? We'll take him. Absolutely.
Mind you, on Trent, he's a little bit different too, because not many coaches jump on the team bus, the opposing bus at the end of the game saying, boys, yeah, well played.
And take them to the Brookie Hotel after a win, which is right up Matt Moylan's alley. He's that type of 1990s footballer.
Yeah.
He'd fit much better in with Trent Barrett in terms of his preparation and his mindset. He's a footballer that just flicks the switch when he walks across the line and he wants to play under Trent Barrett.
Yeah. Now, the Blues, mate, they're going to boycott the gala night and support a loss.
This was really interesting. So on Monday night, the Blues held the Brad Fittler medal.
Yes.
It was a pretty good event, given the circumstances, how the series ended. Full room, good spirit. But right in the middle of the room, stuck out like a sore thumb, was virtually an empty table. And that table was reserved for all of Laurie Daly's support staff.
Oh.
And none of them showed up. You had the assistant coach, John Cartwright, Matt Parrish, they weren't there. Peter Sterling wasn't there as well, the selection advisor. The medical staff weren't there. Now, I can't categorically say they all boycotted. They might have had prior commitments, but some I've spoken to definitely did. There was loyalty shown to Laurie Daly, who went off to Hawaii and was no chance of ever going on the night. So as we can see from that, there's a bit of a split in the ranks with the people who've been involved from a long time for the New South Wales Rugby League. And if Brad Fittler were to get the job, that's going to make things interesting, whether he'd have the choice of having those people, because they probably feel they would be betraying Laurie Daly if they stayed on board.
So we've got a fractured group already.
Yep.
And we're 10 months away from the start of the series.
That's right. So, I mean, there's no shortage of people capable of doing the job. And I don't think Freddie's past the post just yet, because there's a lot of this talk about Des Hasler. But it's an interesting one. Loz, his main trait is loyalty. And, you know, he's got it back from these people. And they've probably damaged any chance that they'd have of getting employment going forward in upcoming series by doing what they did on Monday night.
13:53:53, Josh Masood, the seventh tackle segment. Get involved if you like. Don't forget we've still got that Big Sports Breakfast gym bag for our best caller or best text message. We will get to them, but if you call now, you'll get through. Josh, I've got to say it was refreshing eventually. I know it's been, what is it now, Thursday morning, that James Maloney has come out and said, you know what, the refs didn't cost us the game. We had more than ample opportunities. He got himself sin-binned at that crucial stage, and it was late in his sin-binning where they eventually scored the try. So it was very, very costly for the Cronulla Sharks. In my opinion, it was a sin-bin every day, and the referee just did what he had to do. But there are... We're looking at all these different sorts of rule changes regarding this professional foul interference with a player trying to score a try.
This is interesting. We're looking at two in particular. So there's been a spate of incidents in the last, I reckon, 12 to 24 months, whereby teams intentionally give away penalties in their own 20 to slow down the play the ball. So the NRL is looking at two options for this. The first is to have a naughty corner option, similar to water polo.
I don't mind.
Yeah, where, right. Where go to the naughty corner.
Where the offending player sits in the timeout chair.
Doesn't work with kids.
For the ensuing set of six, and so they're down to 12. The second option is a bit more complex, whereby a penalty in the own 20 would result in an automatic shot for goal.
So 2-0.
Straight in front, and then the
2 points.
The restart would come from a dropout. So you'd get a double chance there.
Ah.
I don't like the second one, because I don't ever think you want to be promoting shots for goal and turning the sport into rugby union. However, the interesting thing about this, guys, is that it's not the idea of the NRL. I'm told it's the idea of a guy who's pretty big in the tequila world, who's a good mate of our colleague Brett Camorley, actually, at Channel 7. And he was taking credit for this yesterday, because he's been telling me about this for about 6 months. And they're close to Todd Greenberg, and Todd's wheeled it out. So things come from the funniest roots.
Yeah, there's great ideas on tequila.
See, I've like, exactly. I like the Nordic Corner idea. It's been one thing I've been trying to push. But if you still stay out for your 10, you only come back if they score.
Yeah, but
that's what happens in water polo.
But geez, you have to, or until they drop the ball, or until they
come back. They come back in when the other team scores.
But what if they drop the ball
in water polo?
Rugby league. If there's a change over possession, three tackles after they go off, and your team has the ball, they could stay. They could stay in the naughty corner for.
No. You come back in after 10.
Ten.
Or score.
Yeah, you get you still get your 10 minute sin bin.
For giving away a penalty in the opposition 20.
No. It's for stopping it. For interfering with a try being scored.
Oh, right. But what about this to cure this spate of teams cynically giving away penalties?
Just for the holding
that,
down.
That's what they're trying to stop.
Josh, right. Tequila doesn't always work. There's an idea.
No, he just needs to drink more of it.
Hello, John.
Yeah, g'day, fellas. How's it going?
Good, John.
I'm just wondering, I've got a couple of questions about the refs and the coaches. Just wondering if the coaches have to give an interview after each match. Is that...
Yes.
That's correct. They have to give an interview and before, the day before, and straight after the game.
Right. So can you explain what the procedure is if, you know, I'm a coach and I've got a grievance against the referees?
Yeah, well, you express it in a civil manner without questioning the integrity of the referee. That's you'll be on good ground there if you do that. You don't overly criticise the referee to bring the game into disrepute, but otherwise you're entitled to do that. And I think as a professional on a pay packet that probably the median for the NRL is about $700,000 to $800,000, there's only 16 of these jobs available. You should be able to do that.
And to the coaches and referees ever get together after a game, meeting of coaches and referees or anything?
Not wholesale, no. But the coach is also always able to contact the referee's boss, Tony Archer, and have a chat and a review of the decisions that weekend. His phone's always open.
Good on you. Well done, John. They're fruitless conversations, though. Hello, Craig. Good morning to you.
Hello.
Hi, Craig.
Hi, guys. Hey, just on Cronulla, look, a few points. First, as a supporter, yeah, I agree with you that Flanagan and the players need to be accountable for their performance. You know, all through the season, they had the worst completion rate, the most errors, the worst discipline. And ultimately, they talked about it all year and they never fixed it. And that came back to bite them in that semi-final on Sunday. But a few other points. You know, the Maloney incident, I probably disagree, TK.
Sure.
I don't think that was a sin bin. But the point is, Maloney and Fifita, you know, they've put themselves in that position where they're on notice from the refs. And if they step out of line, they're more likely to get penalised than other players. So they've just got to...
Definitely.
Yeah, I agree with
you. You are the old tip sheet. You are so right.
They've earned that reputation.
You earned the reputation.
They've earned that reputation.
Exactly.
And if you're a goody two-shoes, you've earned that reputation. And
Cameron Smith.
You're going to get away with a bit.
That's real, yes.
That's real.
It's 100% real. And Cronulla have an issue because they have a number of those players in their team.
Good on you. It's a good call. Let's get back to the open line because we've got Josh Masood, our seventh tackle segment. Happy to take as many calls as possible on 13:53.
Never anything to talk about in the world.
No, it's all been good. It's all been good.
Hello, Harry.
Hi, guys. How are you this morning?
Very well.
Look, I've just got a quick one. What I'd like to put to you is you just talked about reputations and how that stands with the refs, and I'd say that is exactly what happened. My problem is, as you just said, Cameron Smith's got a reputation as a clean skin. Well, he's not a clean skin, and anyone who plays football knows he's not a clean skin.
But it's the way he talks to the referees, the way he presents himself. He doesn't get in their face and yells and gesticulates. And that's what does it. And also his reputation in the game itself. Craig Bellamy was fascinating afterwards, Harry, to listen to him in the press conference. He was saying he felt inadequate presenting Cameron Smith his jersey for his record-breaking game. He said he felt in awe of Cameron Smith. That's his coach. That's his boss. That's the guy that's meant to be telling him what to do. Now imagine how mere referees feel trying to stand up to him. He just has this larger-than-life aura.
Well, I'm in the same boat. I'm in awe of him, how he gets away with what he does.
That's how. That's how he does.
Yeah, and you're right. Look, here's an old story. Mick Potter told me once that he was having a conversation with the ref. There'd been a blow-up, and Wally Lewis, it was his last year, he was playing at Gold Coast, and Wally was standing on one side of the ruck and Mick was on the other, and Mick was trying to talk to the ref, and Wally was jumping up and around, gesticulating and going off like a firecracker, basically. Mick quietly ambled over to the ref and said, "Sir, is he allowed to talk to you like that?" And bang, the ref penalised Wally and marched him back up the field and did this and that. And I think Cameron's got a lot of that in him, a bit of reverse psychology and capacity to play the refs also. But my big question this morning, guys, is there a requirement? I'm a workplace trainer and assessor. So if I want to present information in on a particular area, I've got to have a so many years experience in that field or area before I can qualify to give that. Have our referees played the game, because it takes years to get to understand the rules properly, and I'd just like to see them have a background in the game. I think it'd make it a lot easier for them to referee the way that people expect them to ref, as opposed to their accountant's interpretation of the game.
Okay.
Yep, good point. I don't think there is any such requirement. There was obviously an encouragement from the NRL to get former players to do it, like Henry Perenara and Luke Patton, up in the referee's box, but no such requirement, no.
No, there was that push. They were fast-tracked, those two guys, plus Luke Phillips.
Yep, that's right. And he now works at Penrith as their official refereeing advisor.
That's right. So, but that was, again, another thing. It came, it was great fanfare, it was big headlines at the time. And
then no one wanted to do it.
Then just went by. But, I don't quite agree with that, because most of the players don't know the rules anyway.
You don't need to be a player to do it, and just like you don't need to be a great player to be a great coach.
No, exactly right.
Different disciplines.
Here's a good one. This is how to fix all the NRL problems. Put Josh in charge.
Mate.
I tell you, it's easy.
Right at Batto Bay.
Yeah, well done.
Beautiful Batto Bay.
There you go.
That's the clarity of thought you get in living
exactly,
in a beautiful place.
Hello, Ben.
Yeah, morning, gents. Josh, just want to ask a question about Moylan. Mm-hmm. We keep referring to him as an old school 80s, 90s player. But would an old school player dog their team at finals time as captain to go talk with other clubs?
Oh, look, that's a good point. I don't think you can stretch it that far. When I say that, I mean he doesn't mind a few beers during the week. He's probably not as professional towards his rehab and recovery and off-field stuff as the normal modern-day player is. But they come in different shapes and sizes, you know. Like Anthony Watmo, champion player, he was even way more relaxed than Matt Moylan.
But he wasn't
I use
captain.
The word relaxed, yeah.
He wasn't captain, mate.
But should he have been made captain? That's the issue. I think that was a poor choice from the start, and he was a reluctant captain in a way. When I use that term, I mean in terms of his approach, and I think a coach like Trent Barrett, who probably has a little bit more latitude to different shapes and sizes in his footy team, is probably a better fit rather than a one-size-fits-all like Anthony Griffin.
Good on you, Ben. Another good call. We do thank you for that.
We always say on the show that, you know, the talent that Moylan's got, we know that. And the better player you are, the more leeway you get.
Until there's
too much that isn't with the rest
of the
team.
He's a good guy.
Matt.
He's a good guy, Matt.
Fantastic.
Moylan. He is a good guy.
Extremely popular with the kids as well.
Yep.
Matt Moylan.
Sort of got a shy quality to him when you talk to him, hasn't he?
Yeah, he does, but he sort of looks you in the eye and I think he's a genuine person, but he's just not fitting in with the current coach.
I'm a big fan, and I wasn't a great fan of him having the captaincy.
No.
Strangely enough. No. And it was even more strange because as we go back over old discussions, Phil Gould came out and said Trent Merrin should be the New South Wales skipper, yet you can't.
Yeah, some strange things, isn't there? But I think the Penrith administration and the coach are all on the same page, so there's a huge split.
Mate, give us two winners if you possibly can. I mentioned the odds earlier. Broncos $1.45, Penrith $3. That's a big gap. Darius Boyd, number 18.
Penrith are Brisbane's kryptonite because of Anthony Griffin, 9 out of 11. He's won against Wayne Bennett. They always perform well, but I just go for Brisbane at home.
All right. But there's a big difference in the odds there. $1.32, Cowboys $3.50, Parrot $1.32.
Parrot a win because of the turnaround for the Cowboys. The 10-day turnaround last week was massive for them. Going back and forth from Townsville in 6 days, I think it'll kill them.
You've been massive for us as well. Thanks for that, Josh.
Don't no worries.
The fixer tackle, of NRL.
SeventhTackle.com.
.au.
.au.